It's a new week, but it was a busy one last week regarding the Jennifer Crumbly trial, which is now underway. We'll take your phone calls in a minute. Love to hear from you as well. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. So the mother of the Oxford High School shooter undergoing a trial, of course, for involuntary manslaughter, facing a whole lot of scrutiny over her alleged negligence in preventing the tragedy. So the trial last week, Kevin, it was marked with a whole, I mean, some of this testimony was quite emotional. A lot of legal confrontations. And was she aware? And how aware was she of her son's mental health issues?
Yeah, we were just talking last segment about people texting and people saying things on social media. They're getting into Jennifer Crumbly's texting, what she was saying, how much attention was she paying to the potential mental crisis that her son was in. Let's bring in Todd Flood, attorney at Flood Law. Good morning, Todd. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm great. Thanks.
Appreciate you having me. Appreciate you being here. As we start to see some of the testimony unfold, where are prosecutors going? What do they want the jury to be aware of?
I think so far they've established, obviously, the homicide. Then after that, they start off really strong, very emotional, as Tom's pointed out. Then they started into getting into the text messages and along with the purchase of the gun. The text messages carried through today as you see witnesses testify or the witness testify when Jennifer Crumbly was selling her horses to the neighbor, or in essence the barn that was storing the horses. And clearly the prosecution wants to show, hey, she needs money. Charges are coming up. She knew charges were coming up. She texted about that, and she needed cash to get on the lam. She also talked about not having enough money, or possibly the cost of an attorney being some exorbitant amount of $200,000. The defense on the other side, they tried to show that even though this person had feelings that the shooter who it was and that she knew about Jennifer needing the cash, that she didn't sound the alarms hey, the shooter, your son, I'm disturbed by him or anything of that sort. So she kind of tried to do a little what we call a plan B, blame somebody else type situation. So prosecution, to answer your question, is getting into the notice and also the flight. Those are the things that are taking place.
It looks like they're starting to try and introduce some of the drinking habits as well. Is that someplace they're allowed to go? Is that someplace they want to go?
The neglect, the lack of caring, the fact that the family was in disarray for how they treated this 15-year-old and what they did to him. I think you'll see testimony coming out the night before the shooting will be very interesting as that comes out and how they treated him. So the reason why they want to get into the picture of that household is they really didn't care. They didn't give ordinary care. They were more concerned about themselves, even though they knew their son was in a terrible or horrific spot.
You know, now Jennifer and her husband have different trials here, and the defense in Jennifer's case last week pointed to the father's role in, you know, buying the gun for Ethan. How does this argument, you know, potentially shift the narrative of responsibility, or does it shift the narrative of responsibility within this, you know, family dynamic?
You know, Tom, you bring up a big point here, and a lot of attorneys and we're talking about this very issue. Everyone knew at some point in time, it's not a team sport, someone, you know, was going to point the finger at someone else here, especially in this disgruntled marriage. So it changes the dynamic from the simple standpoint of, but go to the husband's playbook. He's now going to have kind of a template, if you will, a blueprint, if you will, of what not to do and what to do in his trial. But there's a bigger issue that is more concerning. If I represented you two in a case, and I was your attorney along with someone else, and we had this joint defense agreement, and I got both of your secrets, right? Because attorneys get to hear everything, get to hear all of it, right? Mm-hmm. How is it then later on that when you separate these trials that I can't divulge, if I represented you, Tom, I can't divulge Kevin's secrets? How would that be fair? It wouldn't be, right? There's an interesting quagmire to this whole issue, because if you remember, both attorneys were in the same firm at one point in time, no longer, but they all had shared, you know, the same office and the same counsel and got all the same secrets. So there's an interesting issue, potential quagmire that may come up or may develop later on.
Yeah, it's going to be complicated. I mean, the whole attorney-client privilege can somehow easily be broken if you're not careful, if you're one of these attorneys. You look at I know the attorneys and the legal experts are suggesting that the jury's really going to be considering how foreseeable the shooting was by, in this case, Jennifer Crumley. Could she have seen this coming, and should she have? And how does this concept of foreseeability impact the whole evaluation that the jury is going to have to look at of parental negligence in this case?
Well, that's causation, right? So is it reasonably foreseeable that something, bad would happen? We have had in Michigan and other cases where parents have been charged with involuntary manslaughter for leaving a gun out, and a child injuring or shooting another. We just had one in the United States in the Virginia case where the teacher was shot because the father left a gun out, or it was the mother that left a gun out, and the teacher got shot and wounded, and the parent was charged. We have a huge case in the state of Michigan where a child started a house on fire and the mom was given warning not to leave any kind of incendiary devices around the child. She got charged for involuntary manslaughter. So is it reasonably foreseeable? Is it reasonably foreseeable that you give this kid a gun and then put in, no, he's in peril. I think, a reasonable mind could see that, and that's going to be for a jury to decide. So it's due process, right? So if the prosecution can prove that case beyond a reasonable doubt that it's reasonably foreseeable that, something really ugly was going to happen when you give this kid a gun, and then I think they meet their elements. And I think it is reasonable to see foreseeable that anyway that, something ugly was going to happen when you give this kid a gun.
Boy, Todd, there's thousands of juvenile criminal cases every year. Are prosecutors now asking on every case where were the parents and should they be charged? And if they're not doing that for all the cases, why the Crumbleys and not the thousands of other cases of juvenile crimes?
Because the rule of thumb is you can't hold a third person accountable for someone else's crime, and you can't hold a parent. So if I gave you, if I knew my son had the inability to drive, but I still gave him the car keys, could the parent be charged? Yes, every day of the week if he killed somebody, right? But, you need to know, obviously everything starts at home, but parents should never, ever be prosecuted for bad parenting. They should only be prosecuted when they basically put others, you, me, and others in peril or in a dangerous position when they allow their child and give aid to their child to commit those crimes. And that's the novel part of it. And I don't think, God forbid, we ever prosecute bad parenting in and of itself, but we prosecute those cases where you and I would all look with that reasonable mind and say, are you kidding me? You gave this kid the car keys and you knew he was wasted and drunk. Yeah. How is it that you're not charged?
Yeah.
Or you gave this kid a gun and you knew he was mentally disturbed.
That's the standard, I guess, they're applying to this case. And then there's all sorts of very, very good questions as to why this occurred. And they all should be looked at. Todd Flood, always appreciate you having you on, attorney at Flood Law. Todd, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a great day.
You too. Do the same. We'll take your phone calls up next here. It's 800-859-0WJR.